This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Astrology University podcast. I'm very excited to have Jason Holly with me today. Hey, Jason.
Hi.
And we're going to talk about sect and experiential astrology and all kinds of stuff. But I thought we could start out by talking about sect because you have a new webinar series for us coming up this month. If you're listening to this after the fact, you can get the download. But if you're before the fact, it's November 16th is the first installment of the podcast. Of the webinar. But I thought we could just start by having you tell me about how you got interested in sect. And maybe for those who don't know what sect is, you could just do a quick little explanation.
So sect is a concept that comes to us from ancient astrology that spoke about the idea that different parts of the chart are followers or adherents of the day or the night. And so different planets, different houses, different signs, all the different dimensions of the chart, we can link to being about day or night. And in the ancient way, it was a method to assess the strength of planets. In the way that we'll be looking at it, it's a little bit more of a sort of psychological approach to night and day as kind of states of consciousness. You asked how I got into it. A couple of different answers to that. You know, one of them is that I'm pretty excited about the revival of, like, the Hellenistic revival, really, we could call it, I guess, that's going on in astrology and all of this material that a lot of pretty pioneering people have brought into our tradition. And what excites me about it is that it's an opportunity to have a whole new set of lenses on the psyche. Like, for me, that's the gift that astrology gives, and it's like it just keeps on giving, is like more and more lenses, more and more ways to get this really, you know, complex and multifaceted view of the human psyche that I don't think anything else that I've ever encountered is as good at doing as astrology. And so in the same way that I like to do that with myth and the archetypes of astrology, I find a lot of the technical material that's coming forward from that time, if we sit with it with a kind of relaxed and, I would say, nighttime consciousness, like a blurry view rather than like a crystal clear view, you know, if we sit there, it's just like if you're at night and you are outside, you know, at first everything seems black, but then sort of images start to appear, or you see a different thing because, you know, your nightstand and your lamp are both in shadow, and so they start to look like one object, and you see it's like an animal or something. And so it's similar with a lot of these ancient techniques. We go in, and at first they may seem black in terms of what they can offer to the psyche, like there's a void there. But actually, if we hang out with the techniques and these things, images start to appear, and for me, they've gotten like flooding in. I mean, I just feel this with so many different parts of the ancient tradition. It's as exciting to me as mythology, and as you know, that's a that's a pretty high bar.
yeah, because that's definitely one of your passions. We can talk about that in a little bit too, about mythology. I was just thinking though, while you were talking about how great it is, the work that you're doing, because I love work that creates bridges and facilitates a cross-pollination of ideas. It's one of the basically founding missions for Astrology University, is that kind of cross-pollination that can happen, because as this Hellenistic revival began and the translation of all these ancient texts that's been happening in the last 20 years or so, there started to be, I saw some splitting in terms of how people were separating themselves into different camps. And there started to be, Michael Meyer wrote a really great piece several years ago where he was kind of calling attention to the problems that we have if we ditch all of this modern astrology that we've been practicing and try to say, oh, well, none of that's important. And we just have to practice, distill everything down to this kind of essence of the way astrology was practiced 2000 years ago. And like, that's the only true way to practice astrology. So that kind of approach doesn't work in any discipline. people do it. It happens across many disciplines, but But you get something much more interesting when people open up the channels of conversation and learn from each other. And I think that's one of the things that is really exciting about this revival of ancient techniques is there are these technical ways of working that we as a whole haven't been using for, you know, some number of years. And it's exciting to start to play with them again, but we can't play with them from that 2000 year ago concept or psychological perspective because we don't have that perspective anymore. And in fact, we have this perspective now where we have psychology. Yes. And we can't just throw away, you know, all of that understanding of humanity and life and our approach to the world. And so we take these old concepts and we work them into our modern framework. And so I love to see somebody as creative as you, especially doing the work that you're doing and playing around with these concepts. So I can't wait to see what you're going to do in the webinars and also just in general over the coming years as you actually work with these, because you're somebody who works with these concepts, not just in terms of ideas, but actually with real people in the counseling room.
I mean, that's really where this is coming from for me. I mean, what is really happening for me is that I'm having, you know, I'm a therapist and I work with a lot of people and I've worked, you know, for 15 or 20,000 hours in the room, you know? And so all these experiences await symbolization, you know, we have all these things that go on in our lives. And then at some point the right symbols come from the unconscious or from, reading a textbook about ancient astrology, you know, wherever they come from. But, and so what's been so powerful to me is to have the experiences I've had with clients mirrored so beautifully by some of these systems in some of the complexity of the dynamics. So I'm not talking about, you know, keywords or this planet's more powerful than that, which is all great. I totally do find that as a useful system. But for me, I'm looking for some relatively complex formulations. And it just like with myth, where all the little plot details actually create a very complex description of psychic process. A lot of these things, particularly like aspect doctrine in the Hellenistic person or the maltreatments, bonifications, these are really potent descriptors. They open my imagination, and that's what I'm looking for, right? When I'm working, Brian Clark and I are close friends and have had a long correspondence for several years. And he wrote something gorgeous to me about the project that it feels like is his. And also we have a sort of shared desires in this area. And he said, you know, I think what you're trying to do is take the lyric of technique and marry it with the music of the imagination. And I think that's something only Brian could say. It's a totally... It's beautiful.
What a beautiful way of saying it. Yeah. But that's also kind of gets at what I was thinking about as well. I mean, I know modern astrologers who are very averse to learning anything about ancient techniques and resistant. And then I also know people working with these ancient techniques who have the same kind of resistance to anything that speaks of modernity. And I just think, well, you can't actually go backwards. that doesn't really work to stick your head in the sand about psychology.
And you're going to miss out. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, there's just so much here. I have really not been able to buy into the dichotomy. It's a false dichotomy that says traditional astrology is here and psychological astrology is here. Like, that's just a totally false dichotomy. And it bugs me when traditional astrologers assume that as a psychological astrologer, I don't know my shit, you know, when it comes to technique, because I absolutely do.
Right.
And it also bugs me when, as you said, the psychological group's sort of very dismissive of that. It's like, and what is the bridge? I mean, this, by the way, totally connects to my notions about sect and day and night consciousness. You could say that a sort of like really, desire for bare bones. I want events and I want timing and I want transits and I want, that has a very daytime way, right? And it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I do predictive astrology. I do work that way. I actually have a pretty strong embrace of that sort of clear, distinct, like, let's see the time lords, you know, let's really work it out. But, and then on the other side, this nighttime approach that is much more metaphorical and symbolic and kind of, to the day people can seem very vague and self-contradicting and indulgent and, you know, all of that. Whereas the night folk can look over at the day and say, that's just so harsh and limited and narrow. But here's the deal, you know, astrology is a twilight art. It is an art which bridges night and day. And our ruler, Mercury, who is the ruler of astrology in traditional astrology, Mercury's whole thing was that he moved between day and night, between polarities. And even as the planet is the god of twilight, right? It only ever appears in a twilight sky. And Mercury's never in a fully dark sky. And of course, never during the day. And so, you know, we are twilight folk. And I think that hopefully our art is moving back and forth between these two worlds and validating both. And I don't mean that you stay in the middle. I think actually you jump over here and you jump out. You move. You keep moving. You know, I think that's why I'm always moving in my webinars and everything I do. I'm always all over the place. But, you know, Mercury is, I think, a really good guide for also open-mindedness in our work as astrologers. And curiosity as the guide. And I mean, that's what led me into traditional, into some of this more ancient, I mean, I'd always had an interest in like medieval traditional, but in the more ancient classical paradigm, that it's been my curiosity, like what's going on over there. And then just, I kind of try to, just like if I'm working with clients, like I'm trying to follow where is my excitement right now? You know, where is there something that is not just the same repetitive thing, and anything can become that if you decide to stop there, you know?
Right. I think that might be a great segue to talking about how you work with people in person, not just through your counseling sessions, but you do workshops, experiential workshops in Santa Fe. And there are workshops that really are going to work better in an in-person format.
Sure.
And so I thought maybe you could tell people a little bit more about that and how you work with astrology in that experiential way where it does make sense that you're kind of trying to stay in touch with the what's arising in the present moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the big thing for me with astrology is that, so to take then from the draw from the modern tradition and talk about the ruler is often held to be Uranus, right? And I vibe with that too. But what I think is often missing is that Uranus was part of an archetypal polarity, and the polarity was Uranus and Gaia, right? It was earth, sky and earth. And a lot of times astrology gets very sky, you know, it gets very cerebral, very intellectual, very disembodied, and sort of like, in fact, I think some therapists who use astrology in their sessions are often like sticking the chart in between you and the client, and you guys don't have to relate, you can just look at this object together, and you actually miss out on all the intersubjective opportunities, and it becomes kind of disembodied. Jungian work often works this way, you throw a dream in between the two of you, and it's beautiful, but if you don't go and then get in and embody it, that's the Gaia part of it, right? Like to get in there and like feel it all through you. And so in the work that I do here, even in, to be honest, even in my presentations, my hope is that I have given myself enough to the field that we are in an experience together. Like, you know, I have certain things I've came to know about how I make presentations that I didn't know, but they were implicit, but somebody pointed them out to me. Like I never leave white space around images. I fill the whole slide with the image. And it's kind of like a, based on like an immersive thing. Like I want to be in there. I don't want us to be looking at the painting. I want the painting, us to be in the painting or anything like that. And so in the same way with astrology and in group work, I do a lot of experiential work and particularly like psychodrama, or people say astrodrama, but to be very frank, I'm hesitant to embrace that because usually it's a very, it's the first scrim of the archetypes, you know, and it gets very playful and energized, but I'm not sure it always gets to really sink in slowly to the knowing field.
Well, for people who don't even know what that is, can you explain it?
Yeah. Yeah. Good idea. Yeah. So the basic idea is that, let's say we're looking at someone's chart. What we decide to do is to embody the archetypes. And so let's say that I have a moon Mercury square. So someone in the room will play, and I don't, but let's just say someone in the room will play, you know, my moon in Gemini, and someone in the room will play my Mercury in Virgo, let's just say. And And so maybe we'll start by bringing somebody in to be the moon, and I'll just sort of interview them a little bit and let the moon speak and sort of say something. Then I'll bring Mercury in, and I'll ask the moon, how did you feel when Mercury just stepped in the square? And we'll start to interact, and we'll see what do they want to do. And it's facilitated for sure. There is a director. And then you can also do things like the person who's charted as can be the witness, but then you can also reverse them into different roles. So you can actually have them step in and play their Mercury and feel what that Mercury feels every time it looks over at that big moon over there, or whatever it might be. And you know, it's a way of getting a full body experience, a full consciousness experience that, of the various parts of your psyche. It's also incredibly powerful work where your inner reality is made witnessable by a group. You know, that's what Moreno, who created psychodrama, you know, he talked about, you know, when children play, they are putting their psyche into, you know, they're having their inner reality validated externally. And that's very powerful. And so, you know, there are many, many techniques and things that we use to amplify the psychodrama to, you know, really get at it. But, you know, so that's one way, you know, that I would use and do use. You know, I've had an experiential astrology group here for about 5 years that I've been, every 6 months or so we do a new topic. But we use this method of exploration, you know, quite a bit.
Cool. Do you kind of do a mix of a bit of lecturing with the experiential?
Yeah. Like for instance, right now we've been doing the houses, and to your point, I've been doing the houses through both multiple cosmologies. So I've been using the diurnal motion, which is really the origination of the houses, where we're looking really, you know, clockwise. Clockwise with the movement of the planets around the chart. Then also looking at it from the 12-letter alphabet perspective, that's more of a modern innovation. And also looking at polarities, you know, in the houses and doing all those things at the same time. And I think it's actually got people really creatively potentiated about each house, how it plays a role in different processes like that. So to your question though, usually we'll do like a more didactic conversational class that's sort of like just explicating all that. And I have people read, you know, from multiple books from the tradition, you know, across that. So people do reading. We'll do conversation. We'll look at charts together. We usually start some embodiment work towards the end of that first one. And then the second one on the same topic is usually fully experiential. So we do psychodramatic work. But also people do a lot of art making between sessions. And so then they'll bring in the art that they've made. So like, you know, the webinar at the summit was a great example of someone who really, really went there with that. And again, we will move into the art and then ask the art what it wants to say and different parts of the art. So it's a way of, you know, what I am as a you know, person whose guiding star really is Mercury, I am always looking to keep the story moving. That's what I believe Mercury was most committed to in myth. He didn't have another agenda about anything, just keep things moving. And so these are all ways to help people get even more in their own body. What is the dream that I'm in? And then when you really get it fully, when you're emotionally in the dream, you also are offered the opportunity to redream and dream onward. And you know, this is where we all evolve the archetypal reality together. We evolve the collective myth when we really drop in. But you can't really do that just from Uranus up here in the head. You know, you got to have Gaia there. She's the one who sends the dreams to people, you know. The Greeks often said that Gaia would send dreams into your body while you were sleeping. So, you know, we need that input coming in that way, not just the cerebral down.
You described it so well. And I think what you're doing with the experiential workshops too, is you're giving people a real visceral experience of astrology as a living art form, which really is astrology at its best, in my opinion. And this kind of top down that you described, where somehow we imagine that somebody has sit in a room and described all of the possibilities for possible potentials for Mars square Saturn. And you just need to look up in the book what they are. And then you can tell the person and they can be like, oh, okay, that's what it is. Now that I know, I can move, you know, move on. And I love how you said that it's allowing people to that experiential experience of astrology is allowing people to then dream on. I love that because that's also bringing in us, you know, and our free will and our creative engagement with the process.
Exactly. That's the beauty of it. You know, it was very interesting. I had a really archetypal magic weekend over the thinning of the veils when Mercury went retrograde on, you know, right at the Day of the Dead. And one of the things I attended was this event. There was a Jungian event looking at fairy tales. And I was reading a fairy tale and then we all talked about it together. And so the first part of it was really pretty magical and we were doing that. But then suddenly the people leading it started to get really heavy handed about like, oh, this paragraph shows how Jung was right about this. And this shows how Jung was right about that. And it became this really, you know, narrowing experience instead of like an expanding experience, you know. Right. And what I find very reliably about when we go into the dreaming body, when we get into that level of experience, into the emotional body, it becomes incredibly spontaneous. Like the funniest thing about astrodrama is that the people who have the most trouble doing it are the ones who know a lot of astrology, because they can't relax and just let the characters speak through them. They kind of go into their head and they're like, well, what would Mercury and Cancer say right now? Right. Oh, Mercury and Cancer would never do this or never do that. And as a result, you know, you get stuck at one level of what you can get to. If you can really let go of what you think it is, and then it will go weird places and it'll be like, is this really right? Is this really Mercury square moon? Like, is this actually what is going on here? And yet it's invariable. Like by the time we get to the end of the drama and we've really worked it through, we will have still stayed within the parameters of the archetype, and yet we will at the same time have totally reimagined it. Like it's somehow we are held by psyche to like simultaneously really go anywhere, and yet it still always can be seen as part of the evolving nature of the archetype. So you didn't just do anything. You were still in Mars, even or whatever the planet.
Yeah.
Even when you thought you were really somewhere else.
Right.
And as a result, you are now in creation. You know, you're not just in recitation, reciting. And I mean, I can't tell you how many powerful images I have in my mind from psychodramas over the years of different aspects. Like as soon as somebody says Pluto conjunct Mercury to me, I have this immediate memory of a psychodrama once where it was a Pluto conjunct Mercury in Scorpio. And the person playing Pluto was very serious and, you know, very, you know, intense. And the Mercury person was like, you know, whatever, like this. And the Pluto person, all that happened in the psychodrama over and over was that the Pluto person said to Mercury, dig. And then Mercury would go, you know, digging along. Oh, look what I found. Look what I found. And the Pluto would take the thing and then say, dig. And it was like this obsessive digging, you know, which I mean, you know, Pluto Mercury.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and I have like a whole smorgasbord of those images in my head alongside the images that we've been given by our astrological forebears. I mean, but this is the wellspring of astrology, right? I mean, this is, you know, this is like where, this is where we really drink of the water. And, you know, Demetra and I were talking at her, planetary condition retreat that I went to, you know, that we were both at a couple months ago. And, you know, she was talking about, it's her view of history that, you know, whenever some of these materials come back into the tradition, there's kind of like a renaissance, you know, there's like a creative revitalization. And I think this is what we're talking about here, you know. And when I see my students, many of whom would often think, oh, I don't know that much astrology, but there they are, you know, channeling the astrology of the next age. I mean, you know, that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah. And I think it's hard for, it's kind of speaks to the day and night consciousness and how you're thinking, how you earlier you were talking about day and night styles of learning and teaching, really.
Oh, yeah.
And how it's hard for us, I think, sometimes to be in a workshop like that, doing astrodrama or something like that, where you realize, or if you're just being taught how to think creatively, which is one of the things we're trying to teach people in our program, but where you find it difficult to trust the source because you're the source. Like if the feeling or the image or the description of Mars, Saturn is coming from inside you as a part of one of those processes, mm-hmm. A lot of us have this moment where we tend to not respect that as much as we would respect it if it was coming from Demetra George telling us what Mars and Saturn were, you know, like some source of authority outside of us saying, this is what Mars, Saturn is. And so when we realize that actually once we get a basic grasp of the archetypes that we can, come up with, potentially new descriptions of these archetypes that are still true to the archetypes and true to the forms. I mean, you know, as somebody who's done a lot of readings, that if you are just a good listener with your clients, I hear new descriptions of aspects every day that I work with clients.
Exactly.
Because they'll describe a situation and I'll be like, that's definitely your Mars Saturn square. And here's why. And here's how, and here's why.
Now that we know what your Mars is, and so you have that situation, and now we're in a Mars Saturn situation. What do you feel in your body right now? What is happening for you in this moment when you think about the way that your boss always stifles your creativity to take a Saturn Mars possibility, right? When you think about that, how do you feel? What is that like for you when that happens? And you know, if we deepen into the experience more, and then it's like, well, what would you do if you could do anything? And you know, and suddenly maybe they start to come up with a more creative way to work that Mars Saturn. You know, that actually, because you know, squares are notoriously difficult to intrapsychically integrate. We almost always delegate part of the square out. Like, bad boss is Saturn, and I'm just this innocent Mars and Aries person who's full of ideas. So it's, you know, it's hard to hold the tension that squares represent. And it takes a long time. And even after a long time, we still act them out. I mean, that's just, they really defy our capacity to be heroes. We're not heroes with our square, from my perspective. But it's like, yeah, there's this chance to sink in. And when you're in there, but what I also wanted to say, you know, this is something that often comes to my mind. I feel strongly that many, many people in the astrology community, who have been coming to conferences for a long time and who actually really know it in their bones and their bodies. And I'm really aware of this because I grew up in a family, you know, my mother, her mother, and her mother were all alive. I was born into the house with all five generations. We all lived there. It was a little wacky. But they were all astrology fluent. You know, my chart was done when I was a child. But none of them were professional astrologers. My great-great-grandmother was a professional tea reader and tea leaf reader, and people came from all over. We lived in the hills. But they weren't professional astrologers, but they knew it in their bones. Like, they felt it all through. And when I think about students of mine and people at astrology conferences, I feel like a lot of times it's people who are very night creatures, and night is not about language and saying this is what this means and here's how it works and laying it all out in a linear way. It's a very different way of knowing and learning. And I think we devalue nighttime consciousness in this culture. There's a huge obsession with day and with, you know, making it line up. And so a lot of times those people think they know less than the people presenting. And it's just totally crazy. I really know that anytime I present at NORWAC or on our webinars with Astrology University, I know there are people listening who really get it way more than I do. And I'm not being weirdly humble or anything. I just know that's true. Like, people who are really night dwellers who are never going to get on a webinar. I'm more of a twilight guy. Like, I'm doing this all the time. And we have a lot of really solar astrologers out there proclaiming the daytime reality. And we have people in astrology who have that sort of entitled solar competence that they can start doing readings after reading one book and, you know, making YouTubes. You know, the whole gang is out there.
Right.
But I really think there's a legion of nighttime people in the astro world who are why some of us are up here talking. Like, And actually, I think I said this because it really moved me the last time we did the summit, like 2 weeks ago. And there was a lot of people responded to my client's art. And I really felt the quality of the community and of the deep listening that people bring to the space. Like, I really believe that the listening field draws forth the best from the speaker. So I really feel that with the world that you've cultivated. And I feel that like at Norwalk, where it's just also a very curated experience, you know, you can really feel like your very best is being brought forward. And, you know, that is about revaluing the night and noticing that, like, you know, my client, who is clearly someone who works with deep rivers of symbolism from that webinar, as you know, she said to me, well, I would never be able to say it the way that you said it. And that's true. That's not what she's doing, but she didn't need to say it. Right. I mean, those images, they do the trick. Like, I mean,
it's another way of saying it.
Right. Exactly.
That's the whole point.
Exactly. Exactly. But I really think that's a big reality of, you know, all this, you know, experience in astrology. There's a place for all of it, but it does. It feels to me like these nighttime learning methods, like art, like psychodrama, various embodied work. I do a lot with like work with the somatic and sensation. Those ways take us into night, and night is bigger and vaster than day. I love day, but night is always, you know, everything starts at night. You know, all mythologies begin in the dark. You never hear like in the beginning was light. Right. So there's something creative and fecund about the night. And then it produces these beautiful daytime things.
I mean, I think that what you're talking about too, with the situation we're in and the way we value day and night differently, it just speaks to the, really the sexism underlying the problematic sexism underlying everything. I had a professor in college who said that she hadn't found a subject, a kind of big world problem that can be traced back to some kind of version of sexism at the source of the problem. And here we're talking about the devaluing of the feminine and the devaluing of, if we want to call the feminine, if we want to equate that tonight, that's devaluing of that way of thinking, that way of knowing, that way of experiencing life, and that we value the solar ways more. There's also a part of us that kind of, I think that there's also a part of all of us that would just like it to be clear and like to be like an answer that we could know. Like, tell me what I should do for my job that will make me the most happy. Just tell me.
Right. Exactly. I mean, exactly. I think this is actually one of the things. It's like when you know, night is so, you know, blurry and indistinct and chaotic. And I think a lot of times when people come for a reading, they are really under assault from the nighttime forces. And they think that what they need is to be brought into day and the, you know, send in a beam of light and lead me through. Whereas I would offer that the way through probably has to do with sinking more into the night and becoming, you know, adept at moving in the night, versus try to bring light and daytime into the night. Just learn how to live with night when it's night and how to live with day when it's day. And in all lives, there's both. But I do think that it's very tempting for the astrologer confronted by the person feeling besieged by night. The astrologer feels the pressure to be the solar light, shining illumination, you know, to the person who is trapped in night. And really that can come from the most deep desire to serve. I mean, it's not just narcissism, although a healthy dose of narcissism is often involved in believing that you have the answer. But the tendency can be like, I'm going to, you know, shine the light here versus let me join you in the dark and let's see what shapes we can make out together. One of my very favorite therapy books is called Making Sense Together. And it's a notion of relation. It comes from a really active stream in relational psychoanalysis, which really acknowledges that it's not analyst patient, you know, it's analyst patient and patient analyst, you know, both people are both. I've talked about this with astrology, like it's not astrologer and querent, you know, it's querent astrologer and astrologer querent. Both should be asking questions. Both should be answering questions. It's not, I came with the question, you give me the answer. That's it's not that that's, I don't think that's wrong, and I don't actually even think it's inherently harmful. It's just so limited for what else we could be doing. That's all. Occasionally, you do need someone to be willing to take the role of the great all-knowing Oz. That's actually developmentally beyond appropriate. Like when I first started connecting with certain archetypes in my chart that I'd been kind of disconnected from, it was so powerful to have someone sort of step in and say, here's what you should do, you know, or it was really developmentally, it was just what that part of me needed. But I'm happy to say that the people who stepped into that role with me, we all knew it's an improvisation. It's not that they're really above me and I'm really down here. It's that's an improvised role for a certain exchange of energy. And when I'm in therapy with people or when I'm in readings with people, I'm willing to take those roles, but I have to make sure we both know it's an improvisation. And at any moment, we're allowed to shift the roles up and move around. And again, this is very Mercury. You know, this is not Saturn's. Right. It's Mercury. It's saying, you know, you can shift around and experience the whole complexity of the inner subjective field. It's a very different way, but it means that you hold both the answers and the questions, and so does the other. It is also, the beauty of it is, it means that you as the astrologer are continuously learning and transforming and being put at your edge over and over again. I mean, even in one-off readings, I mean, obviously I'm drawing also on longer term work with people, but I've begun to do a lot more one-off readings lately, again, and I absolutely think these dynamics can constellate and be danced with you in the course of an hour. You're not just, you know, in an information exchange, you're in a relationship.
That's great, because that actually got at the next question I was going to ask you, which is how you see the role that you play as an astrologer, or rather, like, what's the role that you like to play as an astrologer, and how do you see yourself in that exchange? So you got at that a lot, but can you tell us a little bit more about how you see that relationship working between astrologer and client?
I mean, I think I would describe it as a kind of, dreaming together. And sort of entering the dream together. And so, you know, when somebody sends ahead their birth data and maybe a little bit about their life or a lot, different people, different, you know, need to share. They are sort of like letting me know the dream. And then I'm looking at the chart, and the chart, of course, one way to think of the chart is it's the soul's dream of this life, that is going to be continuously reimagined with each person who sees it. And so then when the person comes, we're really tuning into that together. And you know, I would characterize it as kind of like walking around the chart. You know, we're walking together around the chart, and we're in it, you know, like as if you were in there and you're walking around like, oh, look at this and look at that. And actually, this is like connects to something. I'm going to develop this a lot more when there's time. But this this connects to a passion of mine, which is the art of memory, which is, you know, from the Renaissance medieval zone. And actually, I realized that Tad Mann apparently wrote an essay about this a little bit, but I'm probably going to go another way. But it's the idea that, you know, in the Renaissance, for instance, many people would have what they called the memory theater. And memory theater was this thing you created. It was like a mnemonic device. And in order to remember lots of information, because you have to remember the printed page and the web weren't there, right, that much. And so you had to really have your own ways to access your information. So people would actually imagine, like, you know, whole big archetypal settings in their minds with, like, you know, amphitheaters and castles and palaces and forests. And then they'd people it with little things, and they would use that to sort of remind them, you know, of very practical, concrete facts. But everybody's walking, or not everybody, but the people had the time to do this. This is definitely the definition of privilege at that time. I mean, but the people who did, they were like walking around in this dreamlike, you know, memory association. Well, the chart is that, you know, you could say the chart is the soul's memory theater, and that when you're walking around, you come upon a planet, or you come upon an aspect or a fixed star or whatever, and it awakens a set of associations that you are remembering. And this isn't just memory of the past. It's the notion that the psyche is often fragmented and dismembered, and that you remember it when you walk through the chart. So we're walking through together, and we're in this together. You know, and so where we'll end up walking is where either of us is curious to go. I mean, I might curiously move somewhere. They might curiously move somewhere. It's much more dialogical. And, you know, one of my tasks, of course, is to assist in the capacity of the person to perceive the memory theater, right? Like, because I'm trained to read the memory symbols with the glyphs and the techniques of astrology. But really what I want to do is just like give a little bit of that and see what it potentiates in them. And then they will start walking the chart all on their own, and everything they say, you'll start seeing in the chart. And then it, you know, the memory theaters actually had levels, often like 7 levels, which probably was about, you know, the planetary correspondence and the alchemical, you know, metals as well. But so every symbol had 7 different reads, and isn't that great? I mean, that's all these different ways you can translate a symbol. So it's like an imaginal journey together that, you know, of course I've, you know, got a lot of dates and information along the way, but that also, I think, is part of a memory journey. I mean, if you want to connect to the future, you'll probably have to connect to the past. You have to leave linear time to know the future. So when you leave linear time, the only trick is you don't get to decide where you're going in time. You just say, I'm willing to go into nonlinear time, but you don't really know where you'll go. But if you want to access the holographic experience of time, you kind of have to go into the pocket universe, right? I mean, your chart is like your pocket universe, you know, that you carry around, and you open it up and you can go in there and you're in this whole other thing. And I feel that in every session. I mean, I feel that in every therapy session. We're walking around there. So I know, you know, here's what just happened. I have to share this. So in my head, right, I'm like, oh, that might all sound kind of, you know, very dreamy, floaty, you know. I have a Pisces midheaven. Everyone who meets me at a public level always assumes I'm a Pisces, which is insane to my mind. But you know, I just had this moment where daytime consciousness steps in and says, oh my God, you know, where's your, you know, why don't you have it? You know, like that's very wishy-washy, or, you know, whatever, all that kind of thing. But actually, it's not fucking wishy-washy. Like, this is the stuff of life. I mean, this is the stuff that then the person walks out and makes major changes and choices in their life. And they are more alive to their own experience.
Yeah. And it's because it's not like, always that you go into that nighttime space or that experiential process and you're like, oh, the bear in my dream told me this is what I should do with my life. It's that having the conversation with the bear helped you get more clear about what the next step was. It's not like, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it develops your capacity to perceive the cycles of your own life. You know, it develops your capacity to imagine your own life. Like, I mean, the big secret about my work in astrology, for me, like one of them, is that no matter what I am working with, whether it's sect and day and night and twilight, or it's ancient aspect doctrine, or it's mythology of constellations, the thing I most hope to do is to empower the perceptual capacities of the people who I'm speaking, you know, in conversation with. I want to empower a mode of perceiving that is complex, nuanced and imaginative about your own life and about the world around you. I'm trying to offer a way of seeing. And if we do it again and again with all these, I mean, the content of what I'm doing is very important to me and meaningful. But to be honest, I'm trying to teach in some ways a process, a way of of moving in the world that I think is the true, not the true. That's always a major warning sign. Oh my God.
Jupiter's in Sagittarius right now.
How did that happen to me? Oh my God. I can't believe I just did that. I'm actually completely embarrassed, literally, like, oh God. Or oh goddess, whatever. Yeah. But what I was gonna say is, like, you know, I think it is one of the heart of astrology, one of the sort of essence pieces of astrology is to move around the world this way, you know, with a really potentiated imagination and an embodied imagination, you know, like to really sort of be moving in the world and receiving its messages and feeling, you know, the way your stomach is tremulous in the face of a particular archetype, or, you know, to be like living that way ongoingly. And then when you are brought a new technique or a new myth or whatever it might be, you are empowered to give yourself permission to imagine with it and follow it and have it be an erotic, alive experience, you know. And I use that word erotic a lot. I definitely mean it in the sexual sense, but I also mean it broadly in the sense of life force, like that there's an aliveness that if it's all Uranus, to come back to that metaphor, if it's all Uranus, it's very lacking in Eros. It doesn't have life by itself. Remember that, you know, Uranus dies by castration because he's distant from the Gaia, right? And so Saturn, another representative of the chthonic earth element, you know, comes and castrates him. You know, it's like, it's symbolic. It's dry. If you're, you know, he needs to be with Gaia to be fertile and creative, and to have all his ideas actually have form and, you know, be visceral. This is, again, one of the deeper night and day wisdoms, right? Because the day consciousness was associated more to spirit and the night consciousness more to fortune or more to the visceral, the physical. And so if we're talking about, you know, having an astrology that's twilight, that moves between day and night, it will also need to be visceral and embodied. To have its full range of imagination, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks, Jason. And thanks for joining me today. It's great. Yeah. Great conversation. I feel like we could talk for another couple hours about all this stuff. And folks, if you would like to learn more about Jason's approach to sect and his ideas about day and night consciousness, he's got a 3-part webinar series coming up that starts November 16th. You can find out all the details at astrologyuniversity.com and head over to the event calendar, or you can also just search for Jason's name, Jason Holly, in the search window, and all that info will come up. He'll be teaching 3 sessions over the next 3 months or so, and then he'll do a 4th session for people who came to the first 3 sessions that is actually more experiential, although it won't be astrodrama, but it's going to be a more participatory experience.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that we will be working like with imagery and guided visualization and not really guided visualization, but active imagination. I mean, part of my desire is to be able to share a little more of this way of entering the chart versus like standing apart from the chart and looking at it. Right. How do we immerse together? So this will be perhaps some innovation in how to do that online with each other and look at charts together that way. And then we'll be using it to really get into the day and night energy in the charts. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. And I can't wait to see what you have to create and share with people. So thanks, Jason.
Isn't it funny? Well, it's funny. I was just going to say, isn't it funny? The light has gone down, as you can tell from as we're talking. I'm noticing my image is blurrier because it's we're in twilight out here where I live.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've finished up in twilight. It's getting there where I'm at too. Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks again, Jason, and I look forward to seeing you again soon, and I will catch all of you on the podcast again next month with another episode. So thanks for tuning in.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.